We are going to march ahead. Our study is on our study on Proverbs. This is the third session, and we'll be in Proverbs chapter 1 tonight, and looking at what is called the preface to the book of Proverbs. What can you tell me, you literature geek types? What do you mean by preface? What is the point of a preface? That's the part I skip over generally to get to the book, right? It's an introduction. Okay. Yeah. Talks about what the book's going to be about. Yeah. And generally, the author in the preface gives you some clue as to what prompted him to write it. So what was behind this? Why should I read this book? It's that kind of a thing. So it's giving you just a general idea of what's coming. And this preface is found in Proverbs 1, verse 2 through 6. Now I'm going to read this. I'm reading out of the New King James tonight. Let's just read it quickly because we're going to go through it almost line by line here in a few moments. To know wisdom and instruction. I want you to see there are seven things, seven reasons the author is giving you why this is good for you to study this book. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning. A man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. Let's take a look quickly tonight at these things. We've already got the first thing up there. As I said, the preface gives you the reason the author is writing, why he thinks it's valuable for you, and there are seven benefits that we see here listed in these five verses as to why you should take the time to study this book. The first one is found there in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction. And the word instruction, in fact, some of your more modern translations may use the word discipline. And discipline is one of those words that I just don't like the sound of it because it means hard work. It means training. It means study. It means you got to work at something. And it also implies the idea of correction when you do it wrong. And so notice you are to learn wisdom and instruction. Let's look at that. First of all, I hope by now you have figured out that when the Bible uses the word to know, that usually it uses it in a much different capacity than the way we use it. We throw it around, well, do you know this, do you know that? But for instance, in Genesis, Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore a child. It speaks of an intimate acquaintance with something, and it speaks of an experiential type of knowledge. And so to the author, to Solomon, mere book learning is not wisdom. It requires an acquaintance, a familiarity that is gained through experience with something. And that's the idea. I've seen that the ancients would have taken somebody green right out of college who knows all the theory about something and yet never has laid their hands on it. They would see those people as absolutely unlearned. They don't know anything. And we would say they know a lot. But the ancients would say, no, they don't know anything. They've never had any hands-on experience. They may know all the facts, but they really don't know it at all. And then notice that wisdom, as we have said in our study, is the skillful use of knowledge. Knowledge is the data. That's the facts. Wisdom is the ability to take the data, the knowledge, the facts, and do something with it. Do something practical to actually perform. And you say, well, if I know enough facts, will that make me wise? Well, just knowing facts is just giving tools. It's like a tool, a hammer in my hand is one thing, a hammer in Jeremy's hand's another. He's a carpenter. I can tear up something with a hammer. I just can't build much. you've got the tools. To give somebody a tool chest with all the tools in it doesn't make a mechanic. You have to know how to use it. And so it is that a fellow may not have many tools, but he may know how to use what he's got. I sometimes think I was better off out in Wyoming when I only had a handful of tools. I could get more done than I can now. I got a whole bunch of tools, and I can get anything done, anything accomplished. But you learn to use what you got at hand. And so that's the idea of wisdom. Instruction, as I said, means discipline, training. That includes both instruction and correction. And perhaps the best way to think of discipline is with a coach. And a coach is not only teaching a player. Barbie, you're a coach. You're a swim coach. You have to teach them how to swim. But you also have to do more than just teach them how to swim. You've got to correct them when they're swimming the wrong way. And you may correct them by having them swim a few laps or whatever. And, of course, if you're a football coach, that's what always happened to us, is that the coach got mad, made us run laps. We were punished. And, of course, the idea is this is correction. So, in other words, the idea of the instruction, the purpose of this book is to discipline yourself, is to have a sense of self-discipline about you. I better get going or we'll never get through. But all of these are really interesting. And sometimes you look at these and you say, how many ways can we say the same thing? And to the ancient man, there was a real skill, a real art in being able to say the same thing over and over again in different ways. And to he would look at us and say, you mean you're only going to say that once? You must not think that's very important. You're only going to express it one way. To him, if it's worth expressing, let's see how many ways we can express it. So you're going to find some very similar concepts here. Notice the second thing is to perceive the words, and the word words here means the sayings of understanding. And let's talk about that a minute. To perceive the words, the sayings of understanding. To perceive means to discern. To be able to make a judgment. I know that everybody quotes today Matthew 7:1, judge not, that you be not judged. I heard D.A. Carson say at one time that John 3:16 is the best known verse in the Bible. Said today it's Matthew 7:1, because everybody says you're not supposed to judge. Well, this is all about judging. It is discerning. It is sorting things into categories, right and wrong, good and bad, evil, just, and so forth. That the idea of being wise is to be able to look at something and be able to discern, to make a judgment call about the thing. Notice words of understanding. These are sayings of discernment. We are learning from other wise men things that they have learned. And they're enabling us, look at the last thing there, these sayings or observations, observations somebody else has made, in this case Solomon, that are enabling us to make the discerning judgments necessary for the living of life. That we are going through life and we're having to make judgment calls all the time. And we are learning the sayings that are expressing, giving us the tools to enable us to make those kinds of judgments. I was going to say something about young people, but I'm going to save it because we're going to get to young people in a little bit. But you know, today they say every generation does this. You look at the generation that's coming along behind you and you wonder the world's going to pot, you know. And every generation does that. But oh me, today, you look around at a generation of young people that to a large degree, don't have a clue. Don't even want to have a clue. I grew up in a day when we didn't have a clue, but we wanted to have a clue. We wanted actually to have some sort of sense about us, but oh no. The idea of being clueless and proud of it is one of the hallmarks of our day, and that's a scary thought. Let me get on before I pontificate here. Third thing he would have you learn, and I'm going through these. These are the different verses here. To receive the instruction, notice here, of wisdom. And then he adds justice, judgment, and equity as a sort of explanation of the wisdom he's talking about. This is the third thing. And it sounds very much like the first thing. You look at them again, it's very a little bit. But notice this is to receive the instruction that we're disciplined again of wisdom, to be disciplined by wisdom. And so we receive this instruction, and a point needs to be made here that clearly the writer does not intend for you to sit around contemplating your navel thinking you're going to get wisdom that way. And I mean by that a mystical, just opening yourself up, God, you know, the scripture says if any man lack wisdom, what are we supposed to do? Ask of God and he'll give it to us. And we just assume then we just go passive and go limp before God and he's just going to fill us with wisdom. That's not the idea. He's not talking about hearing voices or mystic impressions. He's talking about doing the hard work of studying the Word. I mean, why write the book of Proverbs if the only thing you got to do is sit around and stare at the stars? Right? That would be very simple. Why go to all this trouble of reading this? Why write these things if that's the way you get wisdom? But notice, instead, we are to receive this discipline of wisdom. It's intelligent discipline. In other words, that not only do we understand we did it wrong, but we understand the where's and why for's. No, we understand the why's and wherefore's. You can say it the other way, I'm sure, but you understand what I'm saying? When you say somebody, when you discipline your child, we ought to be careful that we're not just whacking their hand when they reach for a cookie, that we are explaining the reason we're being disciplined by wisdom. It's intelligent discipline. That makes sense? We understand why. What's going on here? Why shouldn't I have a cookie before supper? Okay? Then notice as well, Solomon expands the definition here in this verse to include these other terms, righteousness, justice, and uprightness, and that's to be straight as opposed to, well, a lot of things. Gay, crooked, perverted, twisted, were to be straight. Notice that Solomon, and this is an interesting observation, assumes that the truly wise man, the truly educated man in the best sense of the word, is at the same time a good, upright, and godly man in character. Let me say that again. Solomon assumes that the wicked man who's a fool, that a man who truly has received wisdom is going to exhibit it by these characteristics. In other words, it's his character that is being shaped by wisdom, and the character that's being produced are those things. He's a good man. He's a godly man. He's an upright man. And so, you know, the idea of being wise and being evil just don't jive in the way Solomon is thinking here. Let's go on. Oops. Seven benefits, we're on number four. To give subtlety, some of your translations say shrewdness, to the simple. Subtlety. Now let me put this up where we can think about it a little bit. It's shrewdness or prudence. The ability to know how to arrive at a desired end. Where do we first meet with the idea of subtlety? Somebody give me the first occasion. The serpent is more subtle than all the other beasts of the field. Now, what does that mean? He was clever and you didn't see him coming. In other words, and what is the serpent attempting to do? To defeat Eve, to seduce Eve into taking of the fruit. In other words, the serpent hid his agenda, and the subtlety is to sort of know what you got to do to get to the end you want to go to. And the serpent knew how to play Eve in order to get his desired end. Now that's evil subtlety. We're talking about it in the good sense. That it is the ability to look at something and see your way through to the end. Now, simple here, it's not simple as opposed to complicated, but it's simple like Simple Simon. Simple Simon is simply inexperienced. Simple Simon is just naive. And it's not that it's necessarily dumb or stupid, it's just inexperienced. Paul says, I would have you simple concerning evil. Well, what does he mean? I don't want you to go out there and experiencing all the evil that's out there. I would rather have you simple. I'd rather have you inexperienced concerning evil. And so in the same sense here, that this is designed, this book, to give wisdom or shrewdness, prudence, subtlety, to the simple person who doesn't have it. The simple person is easy pickings for the man who's shrewd. That's who he preys on, is the simple person. He's inexperienced. He's naive. He never sees it coming, as we said. Whereas the fellow's been around the block a few times, sees it coming. He's able to discern what's going on. Notice the ideas expanded in the second half of this verse. It says to give prudence to the simple and to the young man knowledge and discretion. Notice that it is the youth who is lacking experience. It's not that the youth is lacking brains, but he hasn't been around the block. We live in a culture that adores youth. This was one of the hallmarks of what was called the Romantic Age. We think of Romantic as a bunch of kissing. But the Romantic Age was characterized by several things. And it's the idea that it's the very opposite of what Proverbs is teaching. The Romantic Age taught that civilization warps you and destroys you. That civilization is the problem, not the cure. And one of the books that came out of the Romantic Age was the novel Tarzan. You thought Tarzan's just about a guy running around naked in a jungle, you know, swinging onto a grapevine. No. Tarzan is all about the corrupting influence of civilization. He's the noble savage. That's the term the Romantics use. The noble savage. He's unspoiled by civilization. He's doing fine till Tarzan gets taken to the big city, exposed to civilization, and they're going to ruin him, so he goes back to the jungle where he can live his unspoiled, idyllic life. Well, the truth is, you can go to the noble savage and he'll cut your heart out and eat it. No, the dark places of the earth, as David said, are full of the habitations of cruelty. That's the idea of the noble savage is just a myth. It's what people wanted it to be and not the reality. Plus, nobody ever told Tarzan, I don't think, about ticks and chiggers running around out there. So you get the picture that there is this, first of all, Romanticism prays the noble savage, the guy who's not been corrupted yet by society. But it also prays the child. Because the child has not yet been corrupted by society. I'm just thinking here of one of Whitney Houston's songs. I believe the children are our future. Something about they show the way. Y'all surely got somebody knows more about Whitney Houston here than I do. It's that song, the greatest love affair, which of course is with yourself. That's interesting, by the way. But it's in this idea that the children are the ones who can show us the way. Well, the Bible is the very opposite of that. It's the children don't know the way. They're naive. It's not that they're dumb. They're smart as whip sometimes, but They're inexperienced. They haven't been around the block. They don't have what we say about wisdom. It's more than just facts. It's the ability to use and perceive. It's the ability to discern your way of action. And that's exactly what's lacking. And I'm not talking about the young people here, of course. Y'all are, of course, exemplary. Of course. But in general, I mean, I feel sorry for your generation because they don't have a clue. This last thing, discretion is planning skill. The ability to discern a practical plan of action to achieve an end. I mean, you got 35-year-olds still sitting in mama's sofa playing games all day long. Why don't you go out and get a job? They don't have a plan. They don't even know how to do it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. That's what this book is supposed to correct. It's supposed to give you subtlety. It's to give you shrewdness, and it's to give it to the simple person, the young person, who has not yet had the experience of learning. All right. The fifth thing. Notice we're now down to verse 5. A wise man will hear and increase learning. And this is interesting, because notice the contrast. We were dealing with the simple man, the youth. Now we're dealing with the wise man, the experienced man. But notice that it's saying that there's something here. Let's put it this way. If this is just for the young folks, if this is just for the simple folks, then those of us who have arrived, like James and me, I mean, we're obviously the wise ones. I mean, it's King James over here. We we're head and shoulders above everybody else, so we don't really need to study the book of Proverbs. What's it going to do for us? We're not in the category of simple or youth. But notice he says, if you're a wise man, there's something here for you too, because the wise man is to see this as his opportunity to increase his wisdom. It is assumed that a wise man has an appetite for wisdom. The wise man, as we say up here, the truly wise man, knows that he doesn't know all things. I mean, that is what I find very interesting about the wisest of people that I've been around. They know a lot. But the more they know, the more they're aware of what they don't know. The wise man hears and listens, again, not by mystical voices, but by being instructed by the Word of God. He's able, in other words, the wise man, the truly wise man, is teachable. I mean, we think of the wise man, he's arrived, he knows it all. No. The truly wise man, it knows that he doesn't know, and he is still teachable. He is one who is continually acquiring. Notice the word here, he will increase learning. Or the man of understanding will attain wise counsel, the next phrase says. He knows he doesn't know, and he is constantly adding more and more wisdom to his storehouse of knowledge. I saw some time ago someone say this, and I've tried to practice it, that don't let a day go by that you do not learn some new thing. Don't let a day go by that you don't learn something new that you didn't know the day before. Now, that's a wonderful approach to life. That you are constantly, it's like you have this storehouse of knowledge and wisdom. And the wise man is just constantly acquiring more and more and more. And he knows it's never full. That however far he goes, there's more to go. The paradox, again, is that the more that the wise man knows, the more he sees he doesn't know. Boy, science is certainly true of that. There was a time towards the end of the 1800s when Newtonian physics was sort of in its heyday that it was thought that if we could just break everything down to the smallest component, we could know everything there was to know about something. We could predict if it's sort of like if the world is made of atoms or subatomic particles that function like planets around the sun, then if we just have enough knowledge of where all those little pieces are, what they are and where they are, we can predict then what's going to happen. We can predict the outcome. I'm not expressing that very well, but you understand what I'm saying? If you could break something down to its smallest component and understand that smallest component, how it functions, how it moves, how it operates, then you can predict how it's going. You can predict how it's going to turn out. I'm again not expressing that well, but guess what? As we came into the 1900s, all of a sudden, all of that went out the window. I remember sitting in freshman physics at Rice, looking at the Schrödinger equation and the ramifications of what that equation was saying hit me. And of course others, it hit them a lot sooner than it hit me. But it's the idea that there is a paradox when you get to the subatomic level. You can either know its position or you can know its speed, but you cannot ever know both. It's called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And in other words, there is a limit. You think if you break something down to its bottom layer, it'd be real simple. What this is saying is when you get down to that bottom layer, you can know this about it or you can know this about it, but you can never know both. So when all of a sudden there is a limit to how much you and I, human beings, can ever know about the universe. I'm not saying God is limited, but there's a limit to how much you and I know. And if you know anything about quantum mechanics, you know when you get down on that scale, you're dealing not with certainties, you're dealing with probabilities. There's a probability, that's what that Schrödinger equation was showing. It was looking at a helium atom and the electron cloud around a helium atom. That electron, if you map it, it's like a curve. It's like two bell curves, goes to zero probability in between the two bell curves. What that means is the electron can be half the time this distance from the nucleus and half the time this distance from the nucleus, but it can never be, the probability in the middle goes to zero. It can never be anywhere in between. Do you understand? It can be here or there, but it can't be in between. How does it get from here to there if it can't be in between? In other words, you're dealing on the level of quantum mechanics with probabilities. You've lost certainty. You have no way of saying with certainty this particle is going to be here. You can only say there's a probability. That was what upset Einstein. He said God doesn't play dice. Well, God doesn't, but we do when it comes to us. All right, I'll get off my high horse here. All right. That fascinating stuff, by the way, if you want to look into it more. The sixth thing, a wise man of understanding shall attain to wise counsel. The understanding man is a discerning man. He is instructed to attain, possess, or acquire something as his own. Notice the idea of getting it, grabbing it. And that something is guidance, and some prefer to translate this last phrase, wise counsels. It's a nautical expression in Hebrew. And so the idea is, it's like we would say, learning the ropes. Now when you say somebody learning the ropes, what do you mean? He understands how things work. The guy in a sailboat who understands the ropes knows how to get the sailboat from point A to point B. He knows how to set the sails. He knows at the right angle that it needs to be heading. He's got an understanding of the ropes. So you begin to see that to understand the ropes means that you grasp the subject. You've got it. You're able to function. You're able to make it go. You're able to make it do. He's able, and I put that last one up there to sort of emphasize this. This man then, the man of understanding, is able to negotiate and steer his way through a labyrinth of obstacles to reach his goal. It's like the sailboat. The only thing I know about sailing, I know how to turn something over. Linda and I rented a catamaran one time out on Bear Lake, turned that sucker straight up down. The mast was stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake. But it is fascinating if you've ever sailed. fascinating in a number of ways. If you're going into the wind, you can't just go. If you want to go the way the wind's blowing at you, you can eventually get there. I mean, that's number one, that's fascinating, that you can actually go into the wind. But you can't go straight into the wind. You have to quarter off the wind. You got to, and then you got to tack back and forth. The fella who is the wise man is able to understand that and get himself from point A to point B. Now, it's sort of a fascinating way of looking at wisdom, but you begin to see, yeah, that's the wise man. He's able to negotiate his way through life. He's not like the inexperienced man who doesn't have a clue, doesn't have a plan. He knows how to get from here to there. That's what you're trying to attain to. And then notice the seventh thing, to understand a proverb in its interpretation, is how the King James puts it. To complete this, here in the New King James, to understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. And literally, this word interpretation, notice there's four things here, four words that wisdom allows us to understand. Proverbs, which are these, we spend a long time talking about what a proverb was, these pithy, pointed, perceptive precepts, you remember. Okay? It's these little condensed sayings. Interpretations literally is the idea of satires. Satire is, well, Saturday Night Live. It's mocking. It's Mad Magazine. It's making fun of something. Then thirdly, it's words. It's the sayings of the wise men. And then the interesting one is that last one, King James says dark sayings, which is the idea of enigmas. The ideas of, or the New King James says riddles, puzzles. Do you understand, that the truly wise man communicates on several levels? It's like there's one level for the uninitiated, and then there are other levels for those who are really tuned in to where he's coming from. There are things they get that nobody else gets. I'm struggling to find an example of that. But there are sometimes little insinuations of choice of words that has an association that not everybody's going to make. And so they're speaking sometimes in an enigma. People hear it, and yes, they understand the words, but they're not really getting the knowledge that is being communicated. And this is to train you to understand witty sayings, sarcastic sayings, secret dark sayings, that you're able to perceive these things on that level. Yes, exactly. That's a good example, although I hadn't spent a lot of time watching Rocky and Bullwinkle lately, but SpongeBob. Okay. My Saturday mornings are spent a little more productively than that these days. Maybe, yeah, a little. you think of how many cartoons like that had a sort of a level for children, and then there's a lot of the animated films that adults just love, just eat it up, because it's funny not only, and things about it are funny to them that the kids don't pick up on. And so this is the idea there, that this is enabling you to be able to dig a little deeper into what's being said, that you truly understand and you get it. It may be zip, right over everybody else's head, but you've caught the subtle point that the author is trying to make. So those are just different ways of looking at this book and saying, what's the point? Why waste my time? What am I going to get out of this? And, the writer, the author, Solomon, of course, the Lord's spirit behind him, obviously thinks there's something we need to learn here. We need to start thinking in these categories, and that these things will equip us for the facing of life. And pretty much everybody here tonight, we fit into one of those seven categories, and sometimes more than one. There's an area there. You may be the youth tonight, the inexperienced, or you may be the person who's just a little dense, the simple person. You ever know, well, I don't even, let's not name names. You ever know people just never get it? They just never get it. They don't get the joke. They don't get the, is it just over their head? They're just not tuned in. We know people like that. We won't call names, but we know people like that. The idea of being able to be shrewd, to be able to be tactful in attaining your end, knowing how to proceed, how to navigate, to learn the ropes of how to navigate and steer through the labyrinth of things that you're going to face in this world and in this life. All of us need that. And especially the wise man, he needs to remember that he needs to keep increasing his learning. He's never at the end. His well is never full. There's always something more to learn. Okay, we'll stop there. And that's our introduction. We're not going to take the whole book, by the way, verse by verse. We'll be here forever and a day. We're going to take sort of samples and sections and look at it. But this preface is very different. It's sort of meant to be looked at verse by verse. So we'll pick up here next time and go a little further. Any questions before we proceed? Any observations or witisms? All right. Let's have a time of prayer tonight.